that interact according to the usual gauge interactions. And in addition, it has extra symmetries. It has supersymmetry, so it has the gluon comes in a supermultiplet with gluinos and scalars in such a way that the theory has the maximum amount of supersymmetry that is possible for a field theory in four dimensions. So in some sense, it's like the spherical cow of gauge theories. So it's the simplest gauge theory. In some other sense, it's like a hyperbolic cow because it's also related to ADS space. So because it's the simplest gauge theory, it's been studied a lot because you can do computations in this theory. And the goal of this talk is to talk about certain classes of computations that we can do in this theory, and we are learning how to do more and more computations in n equal to 4 super-M nodes. Now, computations in n equal to 4 super-M nodes can be done through various techniques. One technique is to exploit the amount of supersymmetry and compute things that find a quantity that doesn't depend too much on the coupling, and then compute it with coupling, and then find the simple answer with coupling, and then it's valid for all values of the coupling. And there's a small number of computations of this kind that you can do. And that's a common technique for supersymmetric theory. But that, those computations are restricted to very specific and very simple observables, supersymmetric quantities. And the other technique is to, so the new technique, or the technique that's been developed in the last 10 years, is to use integrability. So integrability is a symmetry of systems that have special symmetries, have more conserved charges than you would expect, and then you can solve them in a simple way, exploiting these extra charges. And n equal to 4 super-M nodes is integrable if you take the planar limit. So you take the limit where the number of colors is very large and the coupling is very small, so that the coupling times the number of colors remains finite. So in that special limit, the theory, the diagrams that dominate are planar diagrams, and so this web of gluons are defining a kind of string surface. So they define a 1 plus 1 dimensional theory, and integrability is a very powerful tool for studying theories in 1 plus 1 dimensions. And this is a particular theory in 1 plus 1 dimensions, which is not quite like the field theories that were studied before in 1 plus 1 dimensions, because here the web is built dynamically. And there's been a lot of work recently trying to understand these webs of these strings in a simple way. So Toth many years ago said that in this limit, you expect a kind of string theory. And for the case of n equal to 4 super-M nodes, we know exactly what the string theory is supposed to be. It's a string in AGS 5 plus 5. So the strings we expect to get, or we get in the planar limit, are the same as the strings in AGS 5 plus 5. And so the goal of this studies integrality is to learn to quantize and be able to compute things using this string picture in AGS 5 plus 5. So from the string point of view, the one thing that we have to clarify is that, as I said, we'll be working in a limit where the number of colors goes to infinity, and lambda, which is the Toth coupling, is kept finite. Okay? Now, so this could be a finite number and could be large or small. So when lambda is large, so here with the ADS5 causes 5 feature, so strings are weakly coupled on this background, and when lambda is small, so this is Yang-Mills perturbation theory, it's good, right? So and what one would like to do is fill this gap between this side and be able to compute quantities for all values of the coupling. And some quantities were computed using this technique for robotic coupling. In particular, so great progress has been made in computing the spectrum of operator dimensions. And Pedro here and collaborators have found, for example, for some operators, they have found the whole curve. So you can compute, for example, here the dimension of some operator. and they see how the matches the strong coupling prediction and the weak coupling. Well, the weak, yeah, it matches into the weak coupling. So next, we expect to be able to extend these methods to compute other quantities, such as Wilson loop, amplitudes, or correlation functions. So that's what one would like to do next. And this would be interesting besides the H3 application, also from the point of view of string theory. It would be nice to be able to solve string theory exactly in a new background with Ramon fields, because it's very difficult to solve string theory exactly in any background. So there are very few backgrounds where you can solve string theory exactly. You can count them with your fingers, so it's basically flat space, I listed them here. So flat space, the backgrounds for WCW models, which are backgrounds where the manifold is a group manifold, the target space is a group manifold, and then some other plane waves and orbitals. So those are the cases where you can solve the string theory exactly, and sometimes when you solve string theory exactly, you learn a less than about t-duality, things like that. That was, you were able to learn about such symmetries of string theory thanks to the fact that you had explicit solutions. The paper I draw it out from magnification and so on. So here, the idea is if you solve the string theory here, maybe you learn more about the connection between gauge and strings and so on. So, why do we want to do that? Why do we want to look at relations in this theory? Well, this is a simple example of the solvable 4D gauge theory. Gauge theories are useful for our world. It would be nice to prescribe in nature. It would be nice to have a solvable example where you can see various phenomena, gauge theory phenomena in a simple way. We would like to understand better the relationship between large N field theories in this limit, and string theory. In some way, you can view this enterprise and try to be the Panama Canal, so there's the ocean of weakly coupled field theories, there's the ocean of string theories, and weakly coupled string theories, and you would like to be the canal, to be able to go smoothly from one to the other, and connect these two different fields of knowledge, and hope that the greater commerce and so on will be and so it would be useful that I solve in this example that maybe we will learn useful lessons for connecting large engaged theories to strings in other cases. And finally, a more practical application is that this could be useful for computing amplitudes in QCD. So people who compute amplitudes for QCD for a living, they say, and they actually do, sometimes compute amplitudes in any but the four as the first step. So they first compute amplitudes in any but the four, and then they correct them to get finally the QCD amplitudes. So if we were to tell them what the amplitudes are in any but the four, it would be very useful for them. Okay, so now we're going to, when you try to build the Panama Canal, you can start from one of the two sides, and we're going to start digging from the side of string theory. So we're going to start digging from this side, and there are other people digging from the other side, have been doing lots of work analyzing amplitudes from the weak coupling side. And so at strong couplings, we have classical string in ideas, so the regime in which we are going to work on is a regime where we are a very large coupling, and so we have just simply classical strings in ideas 5. So the strings, the two-dimensional field theory on the string would be just rigid classically. And one advantage, one nice feature of the strong coupling side is that the structure of integrability is very easily seen. So you can but it is not a mysterious symmetry. When you look at the classical sigma mole, you can easily see that it will be integrable. But integrality looks a bit mysterious if you look at it from the weak coupling side. But we know it's a property of the field theory. And since this structure is very transparent, it will be useful tool. So integrality will be the tool that will enable us to dig this Panama Canal. I mean, you need some serious you need some special machines designed to dig high volumes of dirt,
the tools you buy in Home Depot are not good, so it needs something better. So tackling this classical problem is something that could is a good starting point and for the food quantum problem. And in the problem of the spectrum that I mentioned that is essentially solved, that for that problem it was very useful to first look at the classical solutions, but also at the same time look at the weak coupling and then try to match these two, find things in common between the two approaches, and that way you can make a guess or derive the full theory between. As I said, there are lots of recent progress on the weak coupling side, and sometimes insights you will find from this case say, well, how does this appear in the weak coupling, and then you can find similar things in weak coupling, and vice versa, and so it's a lot of talk between the two approaches. So as I said, we're building the Panama Canal, we are approaching from the two sides. We haven't met, the canal is not built yet.
You're saying the space of field theories is bigger than the space of string theories by having the Pacific on the weak coupling side?
I didn't think about that. They are connected. They are connected through the further place of the way. So amplitudes and Wilson look. So now, if you look at n equal to 4 super young Mills amplitudes, so you have a bunch of gluons scattering, it turns out that you can do a certain symmetry of string theory, which is called T-duality, which maps this problem to the problem of polygonal Wilson loop. So then it turns out, I'm not explaining this in detail, perhaps if you can stop me and I can explain it in more detail in 5 minutes. At strong coupling, therefore these amplitudes can be computed using minimal surfaces that end on this polygonal Wilson loop. So a picture is like this. So this is the final result. You're not supposed to understand where this comes from yet. So, but this is the final prescription. So if you want to compute amplitudes at strong coupling, so the amplitude will depend on some momenta, which are n null vectors. So these are the massless particles that we are scattering. This is a gauge theory which contains massless particles. So we are scattering these massless particles. So these are null vectors. So we can define some positions. There was a hockey stick that up here. So these are some positions we can define from this vector. So we can put one vector after the next. And due to the momentum conservation condition, they will form a closed polygon. Okay? So we have this closed polygon that lives in R4, or R1,3, so one of these directions is time, and the distance between two points is null. So that's the null vector. And then you are looking at the minimal surface, which is ending on this contour. So this vertical direction is the ADS direction, so the direction inside anti-de Sitter space, and the blue surface here is R4, which could be the space in which the gauge theory lives, or equivalently the boundary of ADS space. So all that we are looking at is this surface, and the goal, the amplitude, will be given by the area of this surface. Now, in principle, you would think that the area depends on all these momenta, but of course we have Lorentz symmetry, so it will depend only on just sort of Mandelstam invariant, so inner products of momenta. But in fact, we have something more here. So on this space, we also have the conformal symmetries, so which or the isometries of ADS space, which include further symmetries, namely the conformal generators, the special conformal generators. And what that implies is that in such a situation, the area will depend only on the cross ratios we can make from these points, so the conformal cross ratios. So I remind you that conformal cross ratios are quantities which are invariant under conformal transformations. So if you take 4 points, you can make this type of combination where so a combination of this type between distances will be invariant under conformal transformations, while each distance on its own will not be invariant. So let's say, rescaling can rescale the distances, or a special conformal transformation can rescale them by amounts which depend on where they are sitting. So that's okay. So this is the problem we are trying to solve. We like to compute the area as a function of the cross ratios. So we have these n points, and there will be 3n minus 5 cross ratios, and that number simply comes from, so 3n is the number of variables we start with. So we have n null vectors. So if it was a general vector, it would have 4 components. Since it's null, it has only 3 independent components. So that's 3n. And then 3 times 5 is 15, which is the number of generators we have in the full symmetric group, translations, rotations, and conformal transformations. So the number of invariants is simply this difference. And so that's the number of variables on which the area will depend. Now, I think I was assigned to the strong gravity seminar, and now here you don't seem to see any strong gravity. However, this is what happens to soap bubbles when you apply a strong gravitational field. So the minimal area surface is simply a soap bubble. This is identical to the problem of soap bubbles. We have this wire sending here, and you have a soap bubble that ends on the boundary. And the strong gravitational field that pulls you towards the interior of ideas, so anti-sitter or negatively curved space, you have a strong gravitational field that pulls you to interior, and it's deforming the surface in this way. That's why it has this shape. Okay? So that's where the strong gravity is. That's the last you hear about strong gravity. Okay. Now, so that's the problem, and I'm now going to tell you what the solution is. So I'll give you a flavor of the solution, and then we'll talk about the derivation of the solution. So the solution consists of the following. So instead of considering just the single polygon whose area we want to consider, we'll construct a family of polygons. So, and we construct a family by considering the cross ratios as a function of some one parameter. So we'll construct a one parameter family of polygons. Okay? So this will be a one parameter family, a member of a one parameter family. So this is a technique that is usually used in integrability. You don't just solve your problem, but you generalize your problem a little bit. You will use analyticity and things like that, and then boom, you'll get the answer, but sort of by miracle. That's the way these things work. So now, you want to find this family, and we are going to consider a special family. So why? Well, it will be because it will be useful, but for the moment, this is just the definition. So we're considering a very special family where these various cross ratios, so we have S that runs over the various cross ratios, obey a functional equation in the new parameter. So that will be what we will do. This looks completely arbitrary. It should look completely arbitrary to you. And then these equations can be translated into some other equations, which are called, they are integral equations. So far we haven't done anything. So far all we have done is define a one-parameter family of polygons that obeys these equations. This is totally arbitrary. And these equations are, this is a side remark now, so these equations are similar to equations that were found before in the description of integrable systems. They were found by Yang and Yang many years ago, and more recently, Samolochikov used them also. So now the use of this, finding this family of polygons is that the area can be written as an integral of some expression over this family. So you take this family of polygons, and now you integrate over the family, and you get the area. Okay? Good, so that's the solution. I mean, you're not expected to understand why this is true. I'm not explaining why this is true. I'm just explaining what the final answer is, okay? Yes. Y of theta. So there is a one-parameter family of polygons, Y of theta, right? This is a specially chosen family so that this equation is obeyed, right? This looks totally arbitrary, and the good thing of choosing this family is that the area can be expressed in this simple way. This is the area of the minimum surface.
The area is the same for all the members of the family. So that's another. So you've got the area not just for your problem, but for the whole family problem.
Does that correspond to some geometrical deformation of the boundary?
Yeah, it is a geometrical deformation. So when I say family of polygons, I mean we are changing the position of these points, right? So you have some geometric deformation of the points. It's a specially chosen geometric deformation that obeys this particular equation.
But there are some special values of this parameter.
What?
Are there some special values of this parameter which select some special configuration?
Well, for theta equal to zero, that's the polygon we started with, let's say. And then we have this one parameter family of polygons. Okay, so that's the flavor of the answer. So I'm now going to try to explain why one does this and what I explained most of. So the method will be, again, to use integrability, and we will not find the surface, and we'll only find the area, the surface. And as an analogy, think about how you solve the problem of finding the spectrum of the harmonic oscillator. So one option is to write down the Schrödinger equation and look in the book of special functions, find the Fermi polynomials, or do it numerically, and so on. There are all these options. But there is another way, which is to introduce creation annihilation operators, and from the algebra of these operators, you can derive very easily the spectrum of the harmonic oscillator without ever having to talk about the Fermi polynomial or having to look at the book of special functions. So this is somewhat analogous in the sense that we find just the area, but not the surface. So again, we are solving a differential equation with boundary conditions. So we have that the area is some surface that ends on the boundary. It's again a partial differential equation with boundary conditions, and we'll try to find the area.
You have the ADS5 can be viewed as a coset manifold, so it's a group. It's a coset, so it's a quotient of two groups. So you can, starting with the group element G, you can construct this current, and H corresponds to the things you are going to gauge away, so to the subgroup here, to the part of the current that is along the Lie algebra of this guy. And K is the part that is orthogonal. So K describes the physical fluctuations, and H serves the gauge modes. Now, this current obeys a trivial equation, which has from its definition. It's just simply you take D of this, and you use the simple identities, you get this equation. So that's a trivial equation. And then it obeys a non-trivial equation, which is the equation of motion of the two-dimensional field theory that is describing the surface inside ADS or inside this group manifold, which has essentially this form. Now you can combine these two equations into a single equation that now depends on this extra parameter. So here we will introduce one extra parameter, and now we have a one form that depends on the spectral parameter, and now it looks again like the trivial equation, so again this equation, but now depending on theta. And if in this equation you expand different powers of e to the theta, you get back these two equations. Okay. So far this looks like we haven't done anything. But it will be very useful to have this flat connection depending on the spectral parameter. So this looks like the field strength of a gauge field. So this is a one form, like a connection. And this is saying that its field strength is zero.
What is in the inside this loop?
Yes. So we have this one parameter family of flat connections. So this is a standard technique in this classical integral theories to look for this flat connection, and then you do things with it. So what you do depends on the problem. Equations for the equations you get are also appeared in mathematics as so-called Hitchin equations. They are dimensional reductions of Gamow's self-equivalence equations. And as all equations that have the name of mathematicians, they were studied a lot, think of understanding fairly well. In particular, these equations for the case of SO2 were studied before in connection to wall crossing and n equal to 2 field theories by Gaiotto, Moore, and Nitschke. And
In fact, our first paper used their results, but then our later papers don't use these results. Once you suppose that you solve the equations for A, so you find the flat connection, then you can solve this linear problem, so you can solve, you can find the psi that obeys this equation, and this will give you the solutions. And the integrability condition for this D involves derivatives with respect to two of the coordinates, so there is a non-trivial integrability condition, which is that the connection is flat, so it's the previous equation. And from this you get, in principle you can get, if we are dealing with the anti-Sitter group, the anti-Sitter group is essentially the same as SU4, so there will be, this connection will be in SU4, and there will be four independent solutions. And using these four solutions, we can reconstruct the group element G, which tells us how the object is embedded in ideas. Now let me here open a side remark just to tell you how this flat connection is used, or one of the roles of the flat connection, in the case that the string has the topology of the cylinder. So the string has the topology of the cylinder when we're considering sort of propagating string states. And in that case, you can take the holonomy of this flat connection around the circle, so around the circle, and the eigenvalues of this holonomy will not depend on where you put it, because it is flat. So wherever you put it, wherever you put this circle, you get the same answer. And then you can expand this holonomy in powers of theta, and when you do that, you find that different powers correspond to different conserved charges of the theory. So the first power corresponds simply to the ordinary conserved charges, so the global symmetries of ADS, so the total energy of the string or angular momentum of the string and so on. And then higher powers correspond to non-trivial conserved charges of the model. So those are things that are not apparent from the Lagrangian, but are present due to the integrability of the theory. So this is saying that the existence of this flat connection is intimately related to the fact that we have this large number of conserved charges. So whenever we are using this flat connection, we are really using the fact that we have all these conserved charges. Now for the polygonal Wiesmann loops, which are the ones we are interested in, the wall sheet is not a cylinder, but it's the full complex plane. So this full complex plane will be mapped to the surface we saw in before, a couple of transparencies ago. And at infinity, we have a phenomenon which is called the Stokes phenomenon, which is that when you are solving the linear problem, the solutions will blow up at some power of C. So there will be various solutions which will blow up. One will blow up like C to this power multiplied by 1, the other one multiplied by I, the other one multiplied by minus 1, and the other one multiplied by minus I. So that those will be the four solutions. And they, so there will be these four special solutions which will blow up in these different ways. And so this is similar to what happens when you, let's say, take the Bessel function and you expand it for large values of C. You have two different powers, and these two different powers are the two simple solutions of the Bessel equation for large C. So now, that's a simple behavior, but this simple behavior of a given solution will hold only in some region, but when you go to the next region, you'll also have a simple behavior for four solutions, but they will not be the same as the four solutions you had here. Okay? So it's a kind of discontinuity in the asymptotic behavior. Okay? And that's called the Stokes phenomenon. It is said that Stokes, when he discovered this, he ran into a contradiction due to this fact and couldn't sleep until 3 a.m. and figure out exactly what was happening. It's something well known, and it's a general feature of differential equations. Now, in each of those sectors, there is a unique smallest solution, the solution that decays fastest, and we'll use these unique solutions for each of the sectors. Now, each of these sectors will be related to one of the gluons we had, so one of those straight lines that we had in the previous in the beginning of the talk. And so with these smaller solutions, we can... So this will depend on C and C bar. They will depend on the worldship coordinates. And there will be different solutions corresponding to the different sectors. And we can take four, taken from four random sectors, and construct a certain SL4 invariant inner product. So we can take some inner product. The connection is in SL4C. So I said that the ADS group was SOC, SL2,4, SL4. The reality condition is not very important here. But the point is that if you evaluate this at any point on the worldship, it will be the same everywhere else. So you can then evaluate this inner product wherever you want. So this is a constant that does not depend on the worldship point, but depends on the Stokes actors you pick. Okay. And then it turns out that if you take ratios of these quantities that associated to, let's say, two consecutive Stokes actors and two other consecutive Stokes actors and so on, and you form these ratios, so these brackets are what we defined before, those are the same as the cross space-time cross ratios associated to the polygon. So those cross ratios built in this way that we discussed before. So there's a little work showing this, but well, one can see it more or less easily. And so when we picked this small solution, we could have rescaled it, and that would have changed these angle brackets if we rescale them. But here we have ratios, so those rescaling factors cancel. So these are well-defined, independent of the scale we chose for the small solution. Okay. So if we calculate this, so now the idea is you pick a particular group element that, in principle, that obeys the equations. So the particular solution we're interested in, and then we can calculate this y is of theta. So this is the one parameter family we construct out of the polygon we want. And this is characterizing, this one parameter family is characterizing the non-trivial sort of gauge invariant information of this flat connection. So this flat connection is obeying certain boundary conditions at infinity, and there is some non-trivial gauge invariant information similar to the information we had when we were looking at the conserved charges for a string state. So the same kind of thing, so it's sort of like conserved charges. And that that information is what is contained in this cross ratio. So we can think of this in two different ways. We can think of them in terms of some kind of analog of conserved charges, or we can think of them in terms of this one parameter family of polygons. The two points of view are more or less equivalent. And for theta equal to zero, these are simply just the original cross ratios, space-time cross ratios of the original polygon. Now then, one can derive some functional equations. So the equations we discussed before, we can derive them. So notice that now I've defined this y of theta as these particular ratios for a particular value of theta, right? And now we are going to check that they obey the equations we discussed in the beginning. Okay. And to derive these equations, one needs two facts. One fact is what happens when, for these small solutions, when you shift this complex, this parameter, this so-called spectral parameter. And the second is what relations you have between various inner products. So the relation, what happens is that when you shift the spectral parameter, you get essentially the same a solution corresponding to the next Stokes sector up to some simple matrix you don't care too much about. And the basic reason for that is that these small solutions, when you look far away, they depend on the spectral parameter in this way. And if you start changing the phase of theta, the line along which, so let's say theta has some particular phase, and then when you go to infinity, this solution is smallest along, let's say, this line. This is the line along which this solution decreases as fast as possible. Okay. Then as you change, you add a little bit of phase to theta, the line along which the solution decreases fastest will rotate a little bit. So we'll rotate, and then as you continue changing the phase, it will continue rotating. And when you change the phase by the pi over 2, it has rotated all the way to here. But here was where the next Stokes sector was. So that's well, essentially this equation. That's what that equation is saying. Okay, so that's one element. And The second set, I said that there were relations between these products of four solutions. And you expect that there should be relations because, I mean, this problem has only four independent solutions. And here we have n independent things, n things that we're considering. So there will be some relations between the various inner products. So they are not all independent, and there will be relations between them. And the type of relations is, they are called Plucker relations, and they were studied by mathematicians in the 19th, Plucker lived in the 19th century, so it's not anything very new. And for the particular case of SU2, those of you who have played with amplitudes will recognize this equation. Those of you who haven't, I'm sorry. Anyway, so now this relation is, so this is a vector, this is, let's say, a spinner of SU2. And if you multiply spinners, so there's a SU2 invariant inner product between two spinners. And then if you have four spinners, then you'll get this relationship. And for SU4, you can essentially get a very similar, you get a very similar relationship, except that you put a little star here, which represents two other points and two other spinners of now of SU4, and you'll get the similar looking relationship. And now you can replace by making appropriate choices of the various S's, you'll get lots of relationships. Anyway, so the idea is we can choose a special set of inner products which are defined essentially as follows. So we take an inner product, we take some reference solutions 0, 1, and 2, and then we have some index n that will run over all the casts that we have, all the various stock sectors, and we pick one which involves the product of 2 here and 2 next ones there. And then there will be one that will involve one there and three here. And we'll just define them. And then you can, well, you're not expected to follow that, but using these relations between the inner products we had before and expressing some of them by shifting theta, you can, so you start with the relationships between inner products, and in some of these inner products appear in this relation, you shift theta in some of them. And so you'll express all of them in terms of this single set of functions that we discussed before, and you'll get these equations. So you'll end up with equations of this kind that were designed to be identical to equations, again, bearing the name of someone, so that means that they appeared many times and were useful in the past, and they're called Hirota equations. And so here we design the choice of the inner products and the relationships and the definitions of the T so that this equation would be true. And then those Ys would be simply ratios of these T's. So these T's are just simply these angle brackets I introduced before, just a special set of them. And then you can derive similarly some equations for the Ys. And now this Y system that appears here should not be confused with the Y system that Pedro and company introduced for solving the full quantum problem. The equations, the Y system is different in detail, though it has the same name. So in the end, we end up with these 3n minus 5 Y functions, which was the same as the number of casts, and we can convert those equations into integral equations, and we'll get equations that looked as what we saw before. But in order to do that, we really need a little more about the analytic structure. And, well, you can find exactly what the analytic structure is. Won't describe exactly how. And then finally, you need to compute the area. And so the area starts out as given by an expression of this kind. So this, recall that this K was defined as the physical part of the fluctuations of the group element. Under a small displacement. And this area, if you compute it, you will find that it's infinite. So it's infinite because it's going all the way to the boundary of ideas, and there's an infinite distance to the boundary of ideas, and that's why you're getting an infinite area. But it can be regularized in a well-understood way, and you can write the area as a diversion piece plus some piece that takes in that violates the conformal symmetry, but in a well-controlled way. And then finally, an interesting piece that is conformal invariant. Now, this structure of the answer is also present at weak coupling, and is basically controlled by the symmetries of the problem. So at weak coupling, also people find the same thing. So if you do the calculation at one loop, you find the diversion piece for the amplitude, a piece which is the one loop answer. So these were the people who computed, these were the people who conjectured that this expression would hold for all values, for all Fern, Dixon, and Smirnov. Conjecture this would hold for all values of the coupling. So there is this piece, and then there is a piece which is conformal invariant. Now these diversion pieces, in terms of amplitudes, are interpreted as infrared divergences you get when you calculate amplitudes. And physically, more than infinities are really zeros, because you they are resummed and appear in the exponent. So they are saying that these amplitudes we are computing are really zero. So you have some diversion terms that go like a log squared. And so if you were to expand in the coupling, so let's say a weak coupling, you get something like this. If you were to expand in the coupling, you would get the diversions, but once you resum these effects, you get something that goes to zero. And that's physically expressing the fact that it's not possible to isolate single gluons. So always, when you calculate the physical process, you will have some small number of gluons that will be emitted with zero momentum, or with very small momentum, or that will be collinear with the original gluons. Okay, so that's a well-understood story, and when you calculate the physical process, you will have to sum our amplitudes with different numbers of gluons, and you'll get a finite answer. Okay. So the bottom line is that even though it's divergent, it's still interesting to compute because it will give us the leading contribution to some physical processes. And if you calculate the given physical process, there will be this infrared divergent piece, which here depends on some mathematical cutoff that we put in the problem. Will depend on a physical cutoff that will come from the experiment you're doing. Anyway, so here one can show that this interesting part of the area is given by the expression that I wrote before. So I'm not really explaining where this comes from. You just again have to believe me. I could explain if you want. And that has the form of which looks like the free energy of a system in 1+1 dimensions, where this term looks like the energy written. I hope this expression is familiar as the energy written in terms of the rapidity, and this looks like 1+ something which can be interpreted as the occupation number. And indeed, when you do integrable systems in 1+1 dimensions, you quantum integral systems, you typically get this, and that's what Young and Young got, and what Samolochikov got when they studied those systems. Now here, we are not getting it from a quantum integrable model, but we're getting it from some simple classical problem. It's kind of a coincidence, or let's say an unexplained coincidence, that we get an equations that look so similar, identical in some cases, to equations for the thermodynamic Bethe ansatz of quantum problems. So here there is no temperature, so this typically appears when you have some temperature, so this is the factor e to the minus beta a, e to the minus beta e. Here we simply get in it, it's a coincidence. So the idea is that the strategy for finding the area is first you pick up some parameters which appear in the integral equations. You solve the integral equations for y, and then you compute the area. And then you find that if theta is a pure phase, then all these polygons are actually real polygons, and they all have the same area. Something I didn't tell you is that when theta is not a phase, these polygons have sometimes complex axes, or they are not, they don't really correspond to physical problem. That if it is a phase, then it will be a physical problem, and all of them have the same area. Now, in general, you just have those integral equations, and you can't solve. You can't go further than that. So you'll have to solve those integral equations and then find the area. Those integral equations are not very difficult to solve numerically. In our paper, there's a short mathematical program to solve them. And let's say for simple polygons, it takes, I don't know, a second or so for the simplest polygons. And anyway, so you could solve them. It's certainly much simpler than trying to solve the differential equations, the partial differential equations that determine the area. But there are some special class of polygons, so these regular polygons, for which you can actually go further and solve completely and find the final expression for the area. So these are polygons that have a CN symmetry. They are the analog of the ordinary regular polygons, except that they're in Lorentzian signature. Notice that these polygons are essentially like ordinary polygons of Greek geometry, except that now we are in Lorentzian signature. The sides are null. Okay? That's the only difference. But if the Greeks had known about Minkowski metrics, they would have invented also these polygons. And so this is a very natural class of polygons. And we have a one-parameter family of polygons in which these y functions are a constant, so they don't depend on theta, but they depend on this one parameter. And they correspond to the high-temperature expansion of those DBA equations. And at high temperatures in 2D quantum field theories, the masses are not important, and you get something that looks like a CFT, a conformal field theory. And in that case, you can sometimes find exact answers. And in this case, the answer is extremely simple. So the area is just simply proportional to the square of some parameter, some angle, and these y functions or the shapes of polygons are determined in terms of sine and cosines of this angle. And you can write them all very explicitly. So in the particular case of n equal to 6, so we have a six-sided polygon, so a polygon with six sides. Such a polygon has only three independent cross ratios, according to the general formula we saw before. And these three are equal for the regular polygons, are n equal to this 1 over cosine square of pi. And that's the final answer in that case. Now, this should be compared with the equivalent answer at weak coupling. So people, you can compare to see how they look like. So people have computed the same quantity in perturbation theory at weak coupling. And the computation apparently doesn't simplify in this limit, and in this limit of all the cross ratios equal, and you still get a mess. So this is what you get at weak coupling. Maybe this can be simplified a little more, maybe not. And one surprising thing is that this function is actually quite similar to the other one. I mean, it's not equal, but if you plot them, they are kind of similar. They differ by, well, adjusting some numbers, which you don't know, because when it's done at weak coupling and strong coupling, but there are two functions that don't look too different. Even though, well, I don't know, probably you could simplify this a little more, but I don't know. This is the people who do this. So as I said, this was computed by people who compute these amplitudes at weak coupling for a living. They really compute sometimes QCD amplitudes, sometimes this n equal to 4 amplitudes. And so this is an example of what one could get. So one would like to extend this to all values of the coupling and go between the strong coupling answer and this thing. So maybe there is and we don't know what needs to be changed. So we don't know whether we'll get similar TVA equations but slightly different kernels or anyway. So we don't know how to go exactly between weak and strong coupling, and that's what we're working on. So in summary, I've discussed Wilson loops or amplitudes in ADS5. We reduced it to a set of integral equations, and we solved them in some particular cases. So the case of the regular polygons, we completely solved them. And in the future, we expect to extend this to the full quantum problem. The simplest thing to do would be to try to calculate the next correction at strong coupling. So go one order more and see what we get at the next order. And eventually make contact with the weak coupling analysis that Freddy and his friends are pursuing. So and eventually in the further future, learn more useful lessons for other gauge theories, apply them to calculations for QCD and LHC, etc. But well, that's for the really, really further future. Thank you.
Question?
Yeah. Yeah. This is very, very beautiful. How far do you get if you try to do this without any supersymmetry? Because you still have the idea that the larger units is given by frame diagrams, which give you surfaces in ADS5. You could still try to estimate somehow the area of those surfaces.
Well, yeah. So with no supersymmetry, I imagine you mean the Shapiro bosonic Young Mills theory.
Yeah.
And in that case, the corresponding geometry is not known. It is known that it's not ADS5 because the theory is not conformal. But it's going to be a string theory that will be whose coupling will be a further one. So we don't have. We also don't have this parameter that we can tune between weak and strong coupling. There will be a coupling that depends on the energy, that being very weak at high energies, and it's a further one in the infrared where so the geometry stops. Now, so that's the string theory. We don't know any way of deriving this string theory. We don't have good techniques on how to write the two-dimensional field theory. I mean, you could imagine you could write the two-dimensional field theory and then simulate the two-dimensional field theory, but we don't know really how to do it. And one of the goals of this exercise is to understand the supersymmetric case well enough in order to learn lessons that we should perhaps apply to other cases. But yeah, so none of what I discussed today calls for it. I use very much the integrability. This property of integrability is probably only true for any but the force for Young Mills. When you start departing, you typically break it. So there are two known field theories that are known to be integrable. One is this any but the force for Young Mills. Mm. And then there's another theory in 2 plus 1 dimensions that it also has a lot of supersymmetry. So it's kind of the maximally supersymmetric theory in 2 plus 1. Yeah, any of the 6 transcendence matter theory, which has, so that one is also integrable. And so the list is short. So there, maybe there are many others that we don't know. People have looked and they haven't found more. People have found some other sigma models that might be integrable, so some string backgrounds which could have a property similar to this.
Maybe to read the equation, the prescription you gave in the beginning that you can go beyond to a very minimal surface, suppose you take another background than ADS,
yes.
Does it survive? I mean, can you identify?
Yeah, so the problem of computing Wilson loops arises in any background that has a boundary. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't need to be ADS5, it could be any other background. And you could try to compute this Wilson loop and it will also be the area of some surface. Now, in those other backgrounds, you would have to work hard compute in this area. There won't be a nice trick like this one that will allow you to compute the area in a simpler way.
But you can identify which gauge theory corresponds to?
Yeah, so this is a more general question of whether there are examples where. So I discussed here only this any but the force of preeminence case, but there are other examples of other gauge theories which are, let's say, not conformal and they are not dual to any but the force. They are not any but the force of preeminence, they are some other theory. And they are well, not two ADS, but some other background. So, some possible. One example that I was studying a lot was it's called the Kleva-Nostrasler field theory. That's one particular case, it's supersymmetric. It's a confining theory, so it's kind of a little similar to QCD in the sense that it's almost conformal in the UV, but then the infrared is confining. And then there's a whole slew of other cases that people have studied for various reasons. So, depending on what you're trying to understand, you get different background. But the gauge gravity duality, what it means is the existence of a boundary. And a boundary is a region where if you approach the boundary, proper distances grow very far, very fast. And so that's essentially what you need. Or in terms of GR, so you need a space whose Penrose diagram is such that it has a time-like boundary. So that's in any such case you would think there should be some kind of dual theory. In some cases you can find them, in some other cases you cannot find them. I mean you don't know how to find them.
You mentioned the relation to the work about low caution.
Yeah.
And what does low caution correspond to in your problem?
Well, it corresponds to taking. Well, it's a funny thing that. It corresponds to. So you have, let's say, a polygon that looks a bit like this. And now you consider this other small polygon, right? And then you you vary, you consider this, and then you consider this polygon, and you consider this other polygon, okay? Mm-hmm. So the word crossing appears when you change parameters, right? For example, when you change the masses and so on. And when you do that change, the space and polygon changes in this way. This world crossing phenomenon is some statement about the subleading behavior of the area. So the area will be, when you have this little cast, there will be some logarithms which are very large, plus some pieces which are exponentially suppressed. And these pieces which are that are very small change when you do this. It's not, I mean, one would like to be able to understand perhaps better and be able to use it in a more useful way. So Gayotto, Moore, and Nitschke used the world crossing to derive their equations and so on. Here we derive the equations using this other method of looking at these two properties that I discussed. But yeah, perhaps there might be something more interesting one could say for one to use this world crossing to derive something more interesting. For example, one could speculate that this world crossing would be valid for all values of the coupling that would have the same form. Try such ideas. But I don't know.
And maybe a related question, that do you have the analysis of this invariance which appear in the work? Related dominance and Thomas, generalized dominance and Thomas invariance. Which encodes the spectrum.
No, I think all we have are the cross ratios, the same cross ratios that they have. But maybe these other quantities that they introduce, they might mean something at this day. I don't know whether they mean something or not. Yeah.
A question about the weak coupling, is it known that I mean, are you conjecturing that there's the same type of or similar equations governing the...
We're not conjecturing anything.
Or
so,
is it expected, or is it known that it's not the case, that the amplitude...
No, it's not known. So we don't know. So there might be an equation, there might not be an equation.
So you... Okay. The question is whether you expect the link to be that the sets of equation kind of...
Hopefully there will be an equation that this is only whatever it is, it has to reduce the distance from coupling.
Yeah.
It has to reduce to the known answer with coupling, of course. This is of course obvious. But we don't know whether that will take the form of an integral equation or whether maybe we need extra variables we have ignored.
Is there any sign of integrability for the set of the level of amplitudes?
Yeah, so now you're asking about integrability at weak coupling.
Yeah.
Yes. So, so integrability is associated to the existence of conserved charges. And the first, I would say, evidence of integrability is that this conformal symmetry I was talking about. So this conformal symmetry that acts on the momentum. The conformal symmetry I discussed here acts on the momenta as if they were coordinates, essentially. So it's not the original conformal symmetry of the theory. So, and that conformal symmetry was actually originally found in amplitudes. So it was a curiosity of amplitudes that they had this conformal symmetry. And then we also found it in the strong coupling picture. And then people further studied amplitudes further, and they found that this was an actual symmetry of even when you went to higher orders in the amplitudes. And by now it's fairly well established that that's essentially a symmetry of the amplitudes.
And this conformal symmetry is just the first layer of the whole.
Right. Now, this conformal symmetry is, so if you look at the strong coupling answer, it's a bit theory that has some number of conserved charges.
because you can start commuting them and you have this infinite number. So this extra conformal symmetry is this one more. So it's the one more thing that can allow you to do everything. And so with this, people then went and constructed explicitly all this infinite number of symmetries, and they applied it to the amplitudes, let's say three-level amplitudes, and find that the three-level amplitudes, let's say, are not level symmetry. In addition, it's called the Yangian symmetry, this infinite number of charges. In addition, well, Freddy and company have been looking at certain singularities of amplitudes, which probably determine the amplitudes, and those also have the symmetries. So I think there is a lot of evidence from which coupling the whole answer will have these symmetries. Now, in many cases, these symmetries are broken by these infrared divergences and so on. In fact, this conformal symmetry is broken, but in a controlled way, so it's anomalous in a way that you can control perfectly and you can still calculate. So now, how the other symmetries are broken is not so well understood. So, for example, well, in the work of Freddy et al., they looked at an infrared finite object that wouldn't, so you wouldn't care about this, and they see the symmetry in those objects. So yeah, I think, and well, for the there are various arguments you could make that integrability should be an exact symmetry. So, for example, there is an exact quantum equivalence in the sigma model that takes you between the original model and the distributed model, and each of the two models realize a different subset of conformal, two different conformal symmetries, which together should generate everything. And so if you, so you have an equivalence at the level of redefining the path integral. So that's another argument that should follow.
Exactly. So, yeah. Plus the fact that
when people did computations for weak coupling using integrability, they got answers that were agreed exactly with computations done by brute force.
So I think in practice, integrability is a true property of n equal to 4.
It will be there at weak and strong coupling. So I'm working under that assumption.
Thank you.